All right, we are live, ladies and gentlemen. In honor of Earth Day, or is it week, or is it month? I don't even know anymore. We are going to be taking a look at the state of the climate alarmism agenda. How is the climate change currently resonating with the general public? How successful are its advocates in getting climate action done? And what does the future look like for the climate alarmist movement? We're going to be talking about all this and more on episode 446 of the In the Tank podcast. Booyah! Welcome to the In the Tank podcast. As always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall. And joining me today, I've got Jim Lakely, VP of the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's finally warming up here and feeling like spring in Northern Illinois, which is nice. But there's so much crazy stuff going on in the world. I mean, I can't believe we could do a five-hour show just on all the crazy stuff, not including the climate, Earth Week, Earth Month crazy stuff going on. But when you see a news alert that Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction was overturned, you know the world's going a little nuts.
Yeah, no doubt about that. That was a surprising one to me. Also joining us, we have Chris Talgo, editorial director here at the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
Well, I feel left out because you guys all have cool blue shirts on and I didn't get that memo. So thanks, Donnie. Appreciate that. Okay, but here's what I really care about today. I should say tonight, the Bears have the number one overall pick. And we have the ninth pick. I guess we're going to take this quarterback from USC named Caleb Williams, who's supposed to be pretty good. He better be, because we haven't had a good QB in a very long time. And with that number one over, that number one pick, gosh, I really hope we get a good receiver and we just put up, 70 points a game. And Bears football is not about 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And it's just all about, this awesome offense.
Yeah,
doesn't that sound like fun?
That sounds like something. Also, we have Linnea Lukin, research fellow for climate and energy topics here at the Heartland Institute. I abbreviated your title. Linnea, thank you for being on with us.
Thank you. I always like to be on here. And yeah, I didn't get any memo about wearing blue shirts either, but apparently it was subliminal or like...
It's one of those great minds
computer
things.
Or something. Yeah.
It's one of those great minds things. I don't know what that says about Chris, but hey.
Blue planet, it's Earth Day,
Yeah, right. Yeah. Pale blue circle, whatever it is.
I don't follow the trends, Donnie. Yes, that's the trends. That's all I can say.
Good point. Before we get going, we do have a lot to talk about. Audio-only listeners that are catching the show, probably on a Friday or later. First off, why don't you write a review for us on iTunes? That would be greatly appreciated. But you could also join us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon Central Time, where we are live streaming on Facebook and YouTube and X and not Rumble today. Couldn't get that working for some reason. But and you can join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comments on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. And you could also support the show by a couple of different things. We have Super Chats functionality enabled if you want to guarantee your comment or question is read on the air. Or if you want to support the show without spending a cent, but just spending a couple of seconds hitting that like button, sharing this content, subscribing if you haven't already, or just leaving a comment under the video, all help break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. So, last week we were talking about what we're going to talk about as for topics this week, and I realized that Earth Day was Monday, correct? I think that was
yep.
Monday.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, we'll do some climate change something, whatever. So I was looking up Earth Day, and then I saw some things suggesting that it was Earth Week. It wasn't just Earth Day anymore, it was Earth Week. So then I was looking that up, and I found earthday.com or earthday.org was referring to it as Earth Month. So have we gone from Earth Day to Earth Month without me noticing it? Is this a new thing? Is April now Earth Month? Have any of you guys heard of this?
No, but to be honest, I can't keep up with all the all the special celebratory months these days. So, who knows?
Look, every day is Earth Day. or else we're all going to die. The planet is going to boil. And so if every day is not Earth Day, guys, every day, then we're all going to die. That's what it means to be in a cult. That's why the climate cult for them, every day is Earth Day.
That's a good point. You know, so I was thinking about Earth Day, and because I just had this like brief, just like memory of being in grade school and learning about Earth Day. And I feel like when I grew up, which wasn't all that long ago, Earth Day was like more about just kind of general environmentalism, like cleaning up pollution, picking up plastic on the side of the road, stop cutting down trees, stop pouring chemicals into the water, like that sort of stuff. And now I feel like the entire Earth Day industry, the entire environmentalism industry has been completely monopolized by like one specific thing, and that is climate change and the reduction of carbon dioxide. Linnea, am I strawmanning here, or do you get that same sense?
No, that's pretty much it. If you're living somewhere like where I live, you might have some local, like the DNR might put on a oyster shell recycling program or a beach cleanup or something, but it really is pretty much all climate change all the time now, which is a shame because some of the, you know, while climate change actually is not making extreme weather worse, so it's really not impacting people all that much. What does impact people is actual physical pollution that you can see and that you can pick up and put in a bag and get rid of. And that stuff, it does seem like it's kind of going by the wayside there. Not to mention the land requirements of things like wind and solar, the mining requirements and everything for them. So it's a little bit weird. In many cases, I think that the climate stuff kind of runs afoul of the old ideals of Earth Day in the first place.
Yeah, Jim, I don't know how far back Earth Day really goes. I don't know the origins of it, but I assume, it's the same deal as you growing up, that like Earth Day, it's more about like picking up the trash on the side of the road. Like, when did it heavily morph into just being a, you know, political carbon dioxide, global warming sort of thing?
Well, I believe, just going on memory, that Earth Day is slightly older than me. It was April 22nd of 1970, I believe. April 22nd, of course, is also Lenin's birthday. Not John Lennon, but Vladimir Lenin's birthday. The revolution, the Bolshevik revolutionary. So I don't think...
Six in one, half a dozen in the other. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't think it's an accident. And Earth Day, of course, was, Linnea, you might remember the name, founded by a man who was later arrested and convicted of killing his girlfriend and shoving her into a chest, you know. So it has, I would say, suspicious beginnings. But yeah, I grew up as a child in the 1970s. And I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before. That the commercial with the fake Indian with the tear coming down his face while he looks at the garbage that's in the on the side of the road and in the river and all that stuff. That was what Earth Day was about. You know, I was a Boy Scout, and when we would go camping, if we ever camped in a state park, the campgrounds were always pretty much filled with garbage, but they were not very clean. But you know, the Boy Scout way to camp was always leave the campsite cleaner then when you got there, and we would just line up and just walk slowly and pick up even the tiniest little piece of trash out of the campsite. So when a Boy Scout troop has been to your campsite right before you, it's going to look fantastic. But that's what Earth Day was about. It was about ecology. You know, it was an ecological movement, and it got hijacked by, the professional environmental movement. I've said on this podcast and also on our The Climate Realism show that maybe at least a decade ago, in the past, the Environmental Protection Agency should have said, we did it, guys. We cleaned up the air. We cleaned up the land. We cleaned up the water. It's job well done. Let's cut the staff by 90%. Keep a few guys in the office and an office here and there just to make sure things don't get messy again. But, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency, we have protected the environment. But just as the EPA now has been weaponized by the ecological, or I should say the environmental left, and so has Earth Day, in which they treat carbon dioxide and all human activity as a threat to the planet itself. To the people that celebrate Earth Day these days, these people are in a cult, and they consider humanity to be a disease like on the earth, like, you know, like in the Matrix, right. That all human activity, there doesn't seem to be any human activity or any animal activity for that matter, when they're talking about like, we need to breed cows that fart less. You know, that was the latest headline today. You know, there seems to be no activity on the earth that they are satisfied with, or they consider okay, zero. And as Linnea pointed out, their solutions to save the planet are actually the most ecological destructive things you might possibly do to the earth. If you're going to be putting in all these offshore wind and wind on land and solar panels. So, you know, we're kind of mocking it here, but I think it's important to understand that what began as a benign and, you know, positive thing to be looking out for the ecology of the earth has now morphed into really an oppressive, punishing holiday. And these environmental leftists, they celebrate it every single day, and they celebrate it by interfering in your life in as small a way as possible just because you're a disease.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, isn't it a shame that Earth Day has been kind of co-opted into this, like, basically like Al Gore Day sort of thing, as opposed to, I mean, we've talked, you're sympathetic to the idea of like going around and cleaning up your kind of hometown and all of that sort of thing. And it's like now, though, it's like when you hear Earth Day, like when I brought it up to Jim last week on the podcast, he like jokingly talked about how he was going to celebrate by like turning on his generator and all of his lights in his house or whatever. It's like, that's where we've become when this whole thing has been monopolized by the, you know, climate change agenda. What do you think?
Yeah, when I was growing up in the early 90s, mid 90s, Earth Day was all about going and planting trees in your neighborhood and cleaning up. You know, we would, you know, go on walks and, you know, clean up around the school and stuff like that. One of the things that I've noticed from the mid 1990s and, you know, fast forward to the mid 2020s, America's much dirtier. I've written about this extensively. It's more polluted. It's more littered. Go to Chicago and there's just garbage strewn everywhere. Even on my way to work this morning on Arlington Heights Road, there was just a giant mattress flung, I guess, off of a pickup truck or something, just in the median of the road. And it's probably be there for, you know, 3 weeks, because part of the reason for that is, and I have extensive experience with this, the roadways are very difficult to clean up. You would think it'd be so easy. You think that local people could just go clean them up, but no, it's all about jurisdiction. If it's a county road, if it's a state road, or blah, 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 blah. So, you know, there's all that kind of like bureaucratic, you know, gobbledygook going on there. But Donnie, just to get to the, you know, I guess the bigger point of what you're saying is, I think when Earth Day was launched in 1970, it was launched under good pretenses. It was launched because back then, you know, for better or worse, you know, President Nixon and whoever else was in charge thought, you know what, we need to do some things to clean up, you know, our air and water. I get that. They accomplished that. Like Jim said, it's now morphed into a just nothing but a power money grab. And it's all about green energy. And it's all about these projects, these offshore wind farms, these, you know, electric vehicles, all this stuff. It's all about money, money, money. So it's just sad. It's sad to me that, you know, they take something that really does matter. Of course, we want our earth to be clean. We don't want litter. We don't want pollution. We don't want all that stuff. But at the same time, they are using it to make money. And in the process, they are actually making things worse, not better. Take offshore wind farms, for example. The amount of environmental degradation that they produce, whether it's the procurement process of those precious metals and those rare earth elements and all that stuff, or the havoc that it creates on marine life in these, you know, oceans, especially for, you know, majestic mammals like whales. They don't care. They don't care because it's all about money, money, money. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure we're going to go into this in many different facets, and this is just, you know, the opening year. But to me, that's what this really is about. It's about people just making money.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is just like the times that we're in, or a result of just the current state of the media, or maybe the internet culture and social media or whatever. But like, I just can't stand how everything becomes so polarized all of the time. Just whatever it is, right? It's like something like Earth Day. Like, why does it have to be geared towards something that's like polarized? And it's like, and it's not just polarized because, you know, we're at the Heartland Institute or whatever. You can go look at polls and show, you know, people's kind of mindsets when it comes to climate change. If it was just about, seriously, like just about cleaning up trash and making sure you're taking better care of like the environment around you, who could that possibly upset? But no, it's got to be this thing that's divisive. It's got to be this thing that's controversial. It's ridiculous. So I long for the day where we can return to our Earth Day back to like its original roots and intentions. And
you know,
all
I think the funny thing is that most Americans agree with what you just said. And I'm willing to bet, in Linnea, I used to live in Bluffton, South Carolina. I remember that we used to do the May River cleanup, you know, a couple times a year. We would also just, you know, Donnie, that was all voluntary, organic at the local level. There was no government program for that. That was just a bunch of people saying, hey, we love our little river. It's, you know, the bread and butter of our town. We want to make sure it stays clean. Same thing, you know, Linnea, with like all those other open spaces in like the Bluffton, Buford area.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, I've lived in the Chicagoland area, the northern suburbs, and in Hilton Head, Bluffton, Buford, South Carolina for many years. The funny thing is, they care a lot more about keeping things clean down there. On Hilton Head in particular, they have like $10,000 fine for littering.
They're guess crazy. What? They have like the turtle police.
There's no litter. It's a very clean environment because they say, hey, you know what? We care about, you know, people throwing trash on, you know, on the street and not cleaning up after themselves, whether it's at the beach or whatever. But then you go and, you know, to, you know, a Chicago public beach, North Avenue Beach, for example, there is just stuff, rubbish everywhere. So right. I can't take these people seriously if they won't even do the most basic thing, like just keep areas clean, but they're, you know, crying their eyes out about the particle levels of some crazy, you know, carbon dioxide. And just like, come on, let's look back to basics.
Yeah. And I'm sure that if you were to look up some speech, surely I'm completely making this up, but I bet it's pretty accurate. If you were to find a speech by like Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson in regards to Earth Day, you know, he's gonna be sitting there with a whole big pile of trash behind him or whatever, but then talking about like a push for some new subsidy to get more, you know, solar power in the jurisdiction or something like that, because there's just such a disconnect from you know, what the origins of Earth Day were.
If we could spend like one more minute on this, so one of the reasons why, and this is something that I care passionately about, one of the reasons why there's so much garbage, literally garbage, in the streets of places like Chicago, New York City, and these other major metropolitan areas, is because they have drastically reduced the budgets for their streets and sanitation. So why did they do that? They didn't do that just because they wanted to do it. They did that because there's so many other things that they are having to pay for, whether it's here in Chicago. We just spent another $70 million on, you know, on illegal immigrants. So you can't have everything. You know, there's limited resources, especially in a place like Chicago or New York City or wherever. And they have now prioritized social welfare spending and, you know, all this other stuff. And that, you know, comes at a cost. And the cost is that when you go to the city of Chicago these days, I was just there a couple of weeks ago, it's shocking how disgusting it is.
Yeah. Well, it's especially crazy too, because I mean, even in my lifetime, I went from bragging to friends who are not from the state that Chicago kept itself so clean. You know, there's not trash everywhere like you would find in some European cities and stuff. And then, you know, Chicago used to be much like cleaner on the streets than like Paris, you know, and then now it's like, well, that's not the case anymore. It looks like Gotham City at the end of that, the third Dark Knight movie.
Right. And this is actually the tragedy that Earth Day has been taken over by radical environmentalists that are completely out of touch. And really, I think normal people are just repelled by their agenda. And so, yeah, I mean, it started off as an idea that everybody could get behind. It's a great day to decide I want to participate in a neighborhood cleanup or a, you know, clean the pond in my neighborhood or you know, just in picking up trash and planting trees. And then it just becomes, you know, a vehicle for advancing a anti-human environmentalist agenda. I mean, I think, what is it, O'Sullivan's law, that any institution that is not explicitly right-wing becomes increasingly left-wing over time. I think Earth Day, of course, was, you know, started and it was kind of a liberal holiday, right? But now it's just become so far, it's just become dominated by absolute radical leftists that it makes it impossible, really, for normal people to kind of get behind it because of who runs it now and what it's actually used for, which is compelling people to basically reduce their lifestyle, reduce their comfort, reduce their standard of living for no particular good end. It's a shame.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, happy Earth Day, everybody. Happy Earth Month. I don't know what they're going to refer to it anymore, but you know, we'll see if maybe we can get there one day. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk about the state of the climate alarmist agenda. So it is to be determined. We'll figure that out by the end of the podcast. So I want to just start off this part of the show by just a little piece of kind of anecdotal evidence, I guess. So last week I saw a few headlines, a few posts, a few comments referring to protests around the country. Your typical blocking traffic and protests and college campuses, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, wow, those climate protesters are kind of stepping up their game, huh? And then literally like days later, I found out that those weren't climate demonstrations, even the road blocking ones. They were all protests surrounding hashtag Free Palestine. And I don't think that like I've ever seen engagement on climate change at the level that we're currently seeing for the hashtag Free Palestine and end the genocide hashtag. And that kind of realization or that that when I saw that, I was like, all right, I've got an idea for the podcast. So that was the genesis of this whole episode was me seeing that those protests, which I thought were climate change, were actually about Palestine and Israel and all of that. So for the remainder of the episode, I want to go through a few facets of this climate alarmism movement and talk about how things are going. I have some charts and I have some polls. I have some news stories and some developments, and I have some proposals and plans for the future that I think will shine a light on the current state of Climate Alarmism Incorporated. But before I get into some of those things, I'm just kind of curious as to your, you know, the panel's gut instinct when it comes to the state of things, climate alarmist. So Jim, you first, since you have been immersed in the climate debate longer than any of us, what is your sense of how the climate movement is faring in the year 2024?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and these should be the salad days for the environmental leftist movement. They have a White House that is headed by a doddering old man, but the policy is actually run by absolute out of touch with the mainstream of America radical leftists, and they are imposing every dream they've ever had about fixing the environment and pushing their agenda. It seems there is no limiting principle on how they will push hard for their agenda, to the point where they want to ban everything that is good in your life at your house. You know, they want to take your car away and make you get into an electric vehicle that you won't be able to afford. So I guess you just won't have a car. They want to take away even your gas stove. They don't want you to burn wood. You can't have a wood burning stove anymore. And so they have their hands on the levers of federal policy. And they're pulling everyone they can get a grip on to advance their agenda. With all of that said, as we're going to show with some of the stories and information we have on this podcast today, it doesn't seem to be pushing the American people to agree with him on these sorts of things. And eventually you're going to see more lawsuits. A lot of this stuff is going to be stopped. And of course, if we have a change in administration in January of 2025, all of this nonsense will be put to a screeching halt. So if I was on the environmental left, I would be pretty happy, but to be on the environmental left is to be an unhappy person. So I think it's kind of a dilemma they have.
Chris, I'm going to go to you next. As somebody that consumes more media on both sides of the political aisle, what's your take on the current state of the climate alarmist movement as of the year 2024?
Desperation, total desperation. I think it's become so politicized. It's become such a divisive issue. You've got a bunch of people in this country that just think this is all about command and control, economic planning coming from the White House and coming from the federal government. You just like Jim said, it's about, I think many Americans think it's about restricting liberties, whether it's saying you cannot buy an electric vehicle in the near future. You can't have this kind of washing machine anymore. You can't have this kind of air conditioning unit anymore. You can't have this anymore. And I think what really boils people's blood is when they see the people who are imposing these bans not be subject to the bans themselves. So, like, for example, when that gas stove thing came out, there was pictures all over the internet of Kamala Harris cooking on her humongous gas stove, you know, and same with the Bidens and just like all these people. So it's like, you know, whether it's the, you know, people flying in their jets telling us to get rid of our cars, like whatever. I think that they've been doing this for so long that it's now gotten blatantly obvious to the American people that these people are saying one thing, but doing another thing. And once you lose that credibility, which I think that they've lost among most Americans, not the fringe people, not the people who will just, you know, buy this stuff, no matter what, that this is why they are resorting to desperation. And desperation to me is that is the mandates. You know, before they tried to use nudging, they're not doing nudging anymore. They're doing forcing. So in 2032, apparently you basically cannot buy a gasoline-powered vehicle, or at least, you know, 70% of the market will not. So they're really, you know, taking these heavy-handed tactics to try to force Americans to accept their climate change, you know, agenda. And that's precisely because Americans aren't accepting it voluntarily. So I think this is actually going to backfire on them. I think the same thing that they've doing with this is what they're doing with, like, you know, all the Trump trial stuff. When you just keep going and going and going, and the American people are saying, whoa, you might want to let up here, like, this is just too much, there's going to be a backlash. I think we are right in the midst, at least at the beginning of that backlash.
Very interesting. Linnea, going to you last here, as the policy and energy wonk more than any of us on this podcast, what is your sense of how the climate movement is faring in the year 2024?
Well, I think that Chris is right that they're feeling a little desperate. They're pushing way harder than they have previously. They're amping up the rhetoric, even as they publish article after article talking about how ramping up the rhetoric is causing the, like, slippery bar of soap effect, where they're squeezing so hard that it's just going to pop right out of their hands. However, I do think that there's something to be said of the kind of slide into a tech oligarchy that we're getting into, where, you know, when you have every single major investment firm, every single major corporation, and the government all pushing in the same direction, I don't think that they give two hoots about what the popular opinion is on this stuff, or if people are getting sick of it or not. I think that they're going to keep trying to plow ahead no matter what. We'll see what happens in November. I do think that a change in presidential part or presidential administration would help a good bit. But I think that they're on somewhat fragile ground here, because I think that if all of a sudden, you know, the United States was to pull out of all those agreements again and not be pushing for carbon border tariffs or anything like that, all of a sudden we're just saying, no, we're not doing this, then it would kind of force other countries to do it. And you would see a lot of these big organizations start scrambling to try and accommodate that. But man, I'm just looking at the outsized impact that, like, a handful of investment organizations have on, like, public policy and corporate policy. And I think that while they are desperate, they're not exactly losing ground. They might be losing ground in terms of popular opinion, but I don't think that they're losing grounds in terms of functional power.
Sure. Yeah, and I want to talk about kind of all these things that we've brought up first, but so far, I should say. But the first thing that I want to talk about is public perception. So we've talked numerous times about polling that routinely shows that climate change ranks very low on the scale when it comes to public kind of prioritizing issues. A lot of the time these polls show up before election times, and they always have climate change, like, pretty close to the bottom of, like, the list of things people care about. But occasionally, you'll see a poll like this one from CBS that I have linked in the show notes that have a headline like this. CBS News poll finds a big majority of Americans support U.S. taking steps to reduce climate change. Pretty powerful headline. But when you start to look into it a little bit, the headline doesn't really have much to hold on to, really. So the headline is generated based off of the simple question, do you favor or oppose the U.S. taking steps to try to reduce climate change? Just that. No proposals, no sense of scale, nothing. Just an open-ended taking some steps. So, you know, I don't know, it's like 70% or something that was like, yeah, sure, okay. And then they generate that headline based on that. But when you actually look, if you dig into the poll results a little bit, and you start going into some of the more specific questions, I think it is a little bit more revealing than that headline suggests. So there was one part of the poll where it was asking people about specific proposed policies by the Biden administration. And one of them was, do you favor rebates and tax credits to make homes more energy efficient? And 63% said tax rebate. Sure, I'm in favor of that. Another question, tax credits for buying an electric vehicle. Only 43% were in favor of that. Spending on projects to reduce climate change, less than half, only 49% in favor of that. Joining treaties like the Paris Climate Treaty, only 47, less than half. So not a big majority in favor of these specific policies. And also, like, these policies that these people are kind of rejecting mostly are nowhere close to the levels of policies or solutions that would be required to do anything to put a dent in global CO2 emissions to avert any future temperature increases. So I kind of wonder if they were to have any like heavier questions in regards to this, what the percentages in favor would be, let's poll people on, the banning of gas powered cars. What percentage is going to be in favor of that? How about transitioning to 100% renewable energy? Despite, higher energy costs. How many people are going to say yes to that? Reductions in meat and agricultural production. I bet it's far less than 0.5% for that, or 50% for that. So the poll, while it might generate a kind of strong headline that, oh yeah, Americans are in support of climate change action, in reality, when you dig down into it, the support's really not there. Jim, what are your thoughts on this poll? Oh, you are muted. Classic Jim.
Sorry about that. I'm muted, and I was also looking at the poll myself through here. Because if you scroll down on the link, and in links in the show notes, you can see the questions that CBS News and YouGov asked people. And, it's just amazing. So, the American people seem... If you tell them, should somebody do something about climate change? They go, well, sure, yeah, somebody should do something.
Right.
Should government do something? Yeah. Well, yeah, sure. Government should do something. Should businesses do something? Yeah, sure. I guess businesses should do something. And then you ask people, well, would you pay an extra $30 a month on your electric bill to stop climate change? And vast majorities of Americans say, oh, no way. I'm not going to do that. If you poll them and say, would you pay a 10 cent a gallon gasoline tax to fight climate change? Americans say, hell no, I'm not going to do that. In fact, there was a recent poll that Linnea helped me find before we went on the air that showed, I think it was 61% of Californians, the epicenter of environmental wackos, and 60% said, nah, I'm not going to, 61%, I should say, would not pay an extra 10 cents a gallon for gasoline to fight climate change. But these polls are interesting because the more specific you get, when you actually ask Americans to sacrifice their comfort, their way of life, to pay just a tiny bit more, the American people say, hell no. But in general, just the kind of idea that somebody should do something, well, sure, most people are going to support stuff like that. So when you see these polls that say, a majority of people want X or Y or Z to take steps to stop climate change, it's always in the general. It's always never specific. And so it actually manipulates the news and people's perceptions of what fighting climate change actually looks like. Linnea can get into this as well. I mean, humans cannot stop. the climate from changing. We can make the air cleaner, which we've done. We can make the water cleaner, which we've done, and the land as well. But we can't stop climate change or fight climate change by anything we do. We are not that powerful. And so all these polls, all it shows me is that, frankly, the American people are kind of ignorant on what power that we have as human beings. But also the only good parts about these polls is that the more specific you get about the sacrifices that are necessary, according to the environmental left, vast majority of Americans say, hell no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. I think it's about time that we do like a Rasmussen poll where we just ask progressively authoritarian questions in regards to like what you would be okay with to stop climate change. You know, just start with like tax increases or whatever, and then just move on to like full on population control and just see what the percentages are in favor of these things. Chris, you were going to say something? Feel free to jump in.
Yeah, when you were going through those poll results, there's just a couple of things that stuck out to me. So one of them was the huge divide between Democrats and Republicans when it comes to this issue. One of the things that I've experienced in my personal life, you know, I've got Democrat friends and family members, and generally speaking, when this issue comes up, they are extremely emotional based. So I can go to them and say, hey, you know, 10,000 years ago, right where we're standing, you know, in the Chicagoland area, there were giant glaciers here. Like, how do you explain that? You know, there were no cars around when this was happening. There was no carbon dioxide emissions that was affecting that. The Earth's climate changes over the thousands of years constantly. And then I go, and wait a second, in the mid to late 1990s, when all this climate change, global warming stuff was coming up, we were told that by now, like, you know, Florida would be underwater, like, you know, the seas would be rising. All that stuff hasn't happened. And when you just, you know, when you just pound those facts, then they, I think, retreat into, well, it's going to happen. And then when you start to say, okay, this is right in line with what you and Jim were just talking about, would you be willing to give up your gasoline-powered car and go EV? No. Would you be willing to keep your thermostat at 75 degrees in the summer? No. Would you be willing to give away your gas-powered stove? No. So you're saying that this is this existential threat, or at least you believe it's an existential threat. But then when it comes to you taking any sort of sacrifices to alleviate this so-called existential threat, you're unwilling to do that. So right. That to me shows that they really don't take this as seriously as possible. Because could you imagine during World War II, for example, if the American government said, okay, everybody, we got a ration, you know, we need the sugar, we need the flour, we need the steel and all that stuff to go to the war effort. And like 95% of the American people were like, no, we're not doing that because it's not a big deal. Like, what are you talking about? I think Germany's not a big deal and Japan, whatever. So when you really like put their feet to the fire on this stuff, they're not willing to actually behave in ways that are, you know, in agreement with what they are saying. So I think a lot of this is them just virtue signaling. I think a lot of people are just scared to come out and say, you know what, I think this climate change stuff, global warming stuff, whatever you want to call it, it's just a giant sham. Mm-hmm. And I think that that needs to become like normalized. Sure. And I know that I'd get a lot of flack when I go and talk to people and they start asking me questions about this. And I just tell them, okay, you know, this is a very touchy issue. So I'm going to go very logic and reason based here, evidence based. And then they just go into a tizzy. So I think that that is one of the big things is that they've been manipulated. They've been indoctrinated. It started when I was in like grade school and it's accelerated ever since. And when I was teaching not that long ago, you know, 7-8 years ago now, wow, it's actually been a while. This was like just across the board. Science class was not about learning about earth science. It was about fighting climate change. Mm-hmm. And it infiltrated English. It infiltrated social studies. It infiltrated every subject matter. And I'm just sitting there going, wow, these kids can't even read or write, but they are really knowledgeable about this supposed climate change, you know, problem. So, you know,
yeah. Yeah, but like I mentioned before, you know, now it's not that they're experts on, you know, climate change. It's that these kids in college and everything are just perfect experts when it comes to Israel and Palestine and the Middle East. So that's where their expertise is coming in, I guess.
Yeah,
Linnea, I want you to weigh in on all this. Yeah, there you go. All this stuff in regards to kind of public perception of this issue of climate change. But I just want to read one more headline first before I get your reaction. And this headline's got to be like one of the bigger like gut punches to just like the climate alarmist crowd that there can be. This is an article from Investor Relations Magazine. Earth Day poll finds waning global interest in climate change, but most still want businesses to act. And in it kind of talks about the findings of this, showing that there's like a dip in people's caring about climate change as an existential threat issue. But in it, it says millennial and Gen Z men feel more apathetic and fatalistic about climate change compared with older generations and women, notes the report. 3 in 10 say it's already too late to tackle climate change. And then they just go back to playing video games and watching TikTok or something. I'm not really sure. But Lene, you probably have your finger on the pulse more than any of us when it comes to these polls in terms of the popularity of the subject, this issue, and with the general public. So what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, this is something that I find is a serious problem, not just for the Greens, but like all of us in general. You know, you, as we were talking about just a minute ago, there's generations and generations of kids who have come up, you know, like my generation came up in school where almost our entire science work was devoted to climate change stuff. Talking about how if we don't stop it right now, if we don't make sweeping huge changes, if we don't like overhaul capitalism and and transfer over to a net zero economy like right now or yesterday, then the world is going to explode in a fireball or something. Or, you know, we're going to have mass extinctions and we're going to have, you know, the seas are going to rise and swallow up Miami, and we're going to have huge hurricanes and tornadoes and storms all the time, and it's just going to be chaos every day forever. Okay, so imagine growing up with that being the message that's pounded into your head every single day for years,
right?
And nothing is ever done. none of this sweeping transformation of society is occurring, and you're being told that that is the only way to stop it. You're going to quit. I mean, there's human beings only have so much emotional bandwidth, right? Like you cannot handle living day to day, being worried about an existential threat for decades that never comes. I mean, that's like, you either become totally nihilistic about it, or you build a doomsday bunker and start sending mean packages to the government buildings, you know, like there's kind of two ways that you can go with that. So it's a horrifying prospect for a lot of these kids. And the good thing is you have a lot of people who have also just given up on the idea that it actually is an existential threat. And they're saying, you know, hey, you keep saying that this stuff is going to get worse, and it's really not. And I don't really feel like doing all the stuff that you've told me to do, so I'm just going to choose to believe that it's nonsense. And which is why I don't really get mad at people when they take a rather unscientific, I think, and kind of inaccurate exaggeration when they say, like, climate change is fake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get mad at them when they say that, because the impact of a statement like that is stronger than being like, well, actually, blah, 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 you know, which is appropriate for a more science-based conversation. But if you want to impact people quickly and move on and try and just shake people out of the funk that they're in with this stuff, it's effective enough.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about, like, even like the older generations, you know, like I was just looking up the James Hansen, because I remember him doing some sort of like climate activism thing in like Congress or something like that back in like the 80s. And, you know, now we're here, you know, 30, 40 years later. And I just wonder if James Hansen, back when he was doing that 30, 40 years ago, ever thought that he would like, because he's 83 now. Like, it's like, I didn't think I would ever get to this age. You know, I didn't ever think that I would get to 83 if he truly believed the stuff that he was talking about back in the 80s. But yeah, I don't know. I just find it curious.
No, but the old guard, I mean, those guys just keep pushing the goalposts, right?
Of course.
Like, they're not going to give up on it. They're just saying, well, you know, well, actually the stuff that we've already done have made it better already. But then you go and look at the like CO2 emissions charts, and the trend line has not changed over the decades.
Right. Yeah, but let's be honest. This is not about climate change. This is just a Trojan horse. This is a Trojan horse for them to assert more power and more control over us. And they use climate change as the means to try to implement that. And it's scary because, like your poll just said, 70% of young Americans buy it. Now, to me, the cognitive dissonance is just stunning, because if they really were true believers of this stuff, then you would think they would be living off the grid, that their carbon footprint would be as minimal as possible. But guess what? It's not. Guess what? They are all into this electronic stuff, which is all, you know, that is, you know, a huge, you know, carbon emissions, you know, amplifier with all the server farms and all that stuff. So they can't have it both ways. Sure. You can't say that you are scared out of your mind that the world is going to be doomed to climate change. However, you won't even lift a pinky to do anything about it. And you know, from the bigger point of view, the people, the John Kerry's, the Joe Biden's, the, you know, Al Gore's, they are doing this purposefully. This is all in, you know, by design. This is all, you know, part of trying to reduce the freedom of movement and the freedom of choice for not only Americans, but Europeans and across the world, because they just know better. And we just have to leave everything up to them.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those kind of influencers when it comes to the climate change alarmism. And that's kind of the next facet of this conversation I want to go into, which is public outreach. So the major flag carriers for the climate movement, who are they nowadays? On the thumbnail for this episode, I chose the typical trio of climate alarmists: John Kerry, Al Gore, Greta Thunberg. Al Gore is now in his late 70s. John Kerry is retiring as the climate czar for the Biden administration. He is 80 years young. Greta Thunberg, she's kind of lost her shine recently. You don't really see her too much. I mean, she's doing some protests in Europe and all of that, but you know, she used to be kind of like a mainstay kind of personality when it comes to all of this. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, who's the real kind of face of the climate movement, even AOC, who was like the face of the Green New Deal. Like, I feel like she's talking more about just like the Middle East and Trump more than anything than you know, climate change stuff nowadays. Al Gore, I mean, it's been how long since Inconvenient Truth? Now you only see Al Gore like once a year on some like Davos panel or something like that. And to me, and maybe this is completely biased, and maybe this is just part of the media echo chamber that I'm stuck in or something like that, but to me, it seems like the people that are most front and center when it comes to the climate change stuff are like the radical protest groups, like Extinction Rebellion. These are like the radical protest groups that throw paint on artwork and spray paint on buildings and block the roads and glue themselves to pretty much everything that they can get their hands on. They're disrupted sporting events and public transit. They're basically doing everything in their power to make as many people annoyed with them as possible. But it seems like they, like when it comes to climate change and who you think is like the people that are really trying to like push that agenda forward or action on climate change, it feels like it's the radical protesters. Jim, no, am I wrong on this?
But it's not them. They're being funded by Soros. They're being funded by BlackRock. Those are the people, the Svengalis, who are really pulling the string. I think it's a giant mistake to point the finger at them as they're the problem. They're not the problem. They're just the messengers in this. They're just the ones who are the foot soldiers. It really matters to people who are pulling the strings at the worldwide level, whether it's Klaus Schwab, the Great Reset, those kind of people. Those are the people who really are wielding the power here. Sorry, Jim, go ahead.
No, I don't disagree with that. I'm, but those, you know, you're saying those are the people behind the scenes pulling the strings. I'm saying who is the face of this? Who are like the flag carriers of this movement? And it seems like it's that. But Jim, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think you can really, you know, Greta was the last real, you know, international single entity spokesperson for the climate cult. But I think, yeah, as Chris points out, radical, well-moneyed, leftist outfits are financing the climate cult, and it's not to save the planet. It's to impose, what's the name of this channel? Stopping Socialism TV. It's to impose command and control socialism on economies and society. That's what climate activism is. It's the bus in which all of these radicals sit to drive us farther to the left and eventually over the cliff. That's what it's really about. But yeah, I think to most people, the face or the most public-facing part of radical environmentalism today are those Extinction Rebellion nut jobs who are, you know, stopping, you know, protesting and sitting down on across a freeway, or you know, super gluing their hand to a airport runway and stupid stuff like that. You know, that's, and people laugh at that, but there's a part, and they're doing destructive things. A part of me actually does feel sorry for them, has empathy for them, because they are completely brainwashed. They have lost any ability to think logically and rationally. If they got their way, billions of people on Earth would die. If we stopped using fossil fuels tomorrow, if we reduced our carbon footprint as a country to zero, not net zero, 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 if we did that tomorrow, billions of people would die. And this country, the United States, would crumble as a society. It would be gone in a week if we even lasted that long. Modern humans cannot live without fossil fuels. China is not going to stop digging up coal and burning coal, some of the dirtiest coal on Earth. India is going to do the same thing. The developing world in Africa, they're being paid off to embrace green energy. But that's not going to last forever, because the money's eventually going to run out. And they want to live good lives. They want to live past the age of 40. They want long lives like we have here in the West, in the developing world, mostly in the Southern Hemisphere. And so this is, if the environmental left got their way, again, billions of people would die. But they're never going to get their way, because it is impossible to operate our modern society with all of this, you know, with their religion, by all of us conducting the sacraments that they think are so holy. It's environmentally destructive, and it would be basically the end of humanity as we know it if we were to go down this road. And so I think most people know it. They kind of look at these radicals that are now the face of the environment, the global environmental movement, and kind of laugh. But I get a little nervous that they're getting a little too close to actual policy changes based on their religion.
Yeah, I mean, Linnea, what do you think? This just seems like if this was like a business, and in many respects it kind of is, like this is like the worst marketing campaign to kind of get your product across that you could possibly come up with. I mean, one more headline I'll let you comment on all of this is, actually, it's not a headline, it's just a story about a group that's taking their notes from Extinction Rebellion. It's a group called Climate Defiance, and they're calling for a historic blockade of the congressional baseball game between Republican and Democratic members of Congress that's going to be taking place in mid-June. And they're justifying this protest of the last shred of civility in our government with your typical end of the world prognostication that's been going on for the last 30 or 40 years. Surely that's not going to go well. Surely none of the protests of the Extinction Rebellion have won any hearts and minds. So, like, what is the logic here? Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Just to be annoying and get press. I don't really know. I don't think it works on anybody. I think, frankly, a lot of Europeans are getting darn well sick of everyone blocking the roads and throwing paint on priceless pieces of art and stuff. Everyone's very annoyed with them. I've seen some extraordinarily angry Frenchmen over the past couple months when it comes to some of the road blockades and stuff. So, you know, when they're getting really mad, you know, it's going poorly for them. But I, in terms of these, you know, these true believers, I don't know if I would say I feel bad for them, but I don't hate them. Because if they really believe this stuff, they really think that the world is going to end, then almost anything that they're doing, they can justify to themselves. And the furthest that they're going with it is making themselves a public nuisance and maybe sometimes some destruction of property, which is bad. But, you know, considering the stakes that they claim that they believe in, it's not anywhere near as bad as they could be doing.
It just seems like not that long ago, and maybe again, maybe you can chalk this up to like whatever, you know, echo chamber that I find myself in when it comes to news and media, but it just seemed like the people at the forefront of this were, you know, I mentioned John Kerry and Al Gore, but even after you guys were talking, it was just like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio or something, and like, yeah, Bill Nye, the science guy, like those were like the idea of like scientists and people that could dress well were like the face of your movement.
Right.
And now it's like the complete opposite. Just gluing themselves to the ground. It's insane.
Think about it this way. I think they're starting to read the room on some of the hypocrisy claims, you know?
Sure.
I think they know that people are getting sick and tired of DiCaprio fly a private jet everywhere on the planet and then show up and tell people that they need to stop driving their cars. So how about we have a bunch of scruffy teenagers through college age kids gluing themselves to the highway, not looking like they have a bed to sleep on. That's probably better optics for them in terms of trying to generate the picture of like a grassroots swell. But, you know, nothing says grassroots like telling people weeks in advance before you're about to go disrupt a major congressional ball game or something. But yeah. I don't know. I want these, in an ideal world, these kids would wake up. You know, we would get the real science out there in as good of a format and everything as possible. Because we don't want these kids to like get hurt and be thrown in jail or something. We want to convert them to, you know, we want to have a reason or like a data-based reconquista for these kids, you know. I would love to see this kind of enthusiasm against like the WEF or something instead of against the average person. That's the most incredible thing about this is the consistent message from people who are climate alarmists, where they say they position themselves as like these downtrodden, you know, poor little grassroots people who just care about the earth and they're up against the corporations and the governments and blah, blah, blah. When every single corporation and government is like groveling at their feet on this stuff, or at least they give the appearance of groveling. Although I do think they have a point with the greenwashing thing. That's definitely something that happens left and right. I mean, it's pretty funny, but it's very bizarre to see people position themselves as like the victims or as the like scruffy rebellion when they're actually the empire.
Like, right.
It's so weird. You know, Linnea, just real quick. So you mentioned about converting them. And I don't think that that's the right way to do this. It's not about converting. It's about, you know, and this is something that's a much larger problem. We don't have fundamental truths anymore that are universally accepted. And I think a lot of that had to do with COVID and all this stuff about my truth and, you know, the what is science and all this stuff. No, there are fundamental truths. So either the atmosphere is on the verge of, you know, burning us up or it's not. And this thing about like that is not something where it's like, I have an opinion. You have a kind of opinion on whether the color blue is a nice color, but you cannot just say, well, I just think that the world is going to end in 10 years if we don't do this. And that you all, billions of people, have to completely rearrange your entire life because I just really think this. We need to just get out of that crazy mindset. And I feel like it's so crazy because the Enlightenment was supposed to get us out of that, you know, like mysticism. And, you know, we just think this kind of stuff. Why have we gone backwards? Why is there not just fact? Fact is fact. Reality is reality. Truth is truth. Like, we just need to have some common ground where we're all saying, okay, yes, this is actually what's happening. And so, Donnie, going back to what we were talking about, I think a couple of weeks ago, when we live in different, you know, media atmospheres, and when we have social media in which you can just, you know, hear only one side of the story relentlessly, that is, I think, one of the reasons why we are in this current mess that we're in.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking, Chris, a line from Usual Suspects, that film, came to mind. I believe it went, the greatest lie the devil ever told was to, or his biggest deception was to make people believe he didn't exist. And the biggest lie when it comes to the climate is the idea that carbon dioxide emissions alone is the thermostat knob for the earth. Once that was believed as an article of faith by generations now of people around the globe, that was the one big lie, the big lie in the environmental debate in this country. And this one we fight here at the Heartland Institute every day, because it is not the control knob of global temperature, CO2. And if we just reduced CO2 in the atmosphere through carbon capture or other kind of harebrained, stupid ideas, that the temperature would come down and everything would be fine. That's the big lie. But it's the big, and that lie was told because controlling human carbon dioxide emissions controls humanity utterly. And that's why, and so that's what the Heartland Institute, that's what we're, and the viewers of this show and listeners to this podcast can do on Earth Day, Earth Week, and Earth Month. And it is to convince their fellow Americans that carbon dioxide is not a pollutant, and it is certainly not the control knob for the Earth's temperature. And if more people believed that, then more people would get out of the cult and join the real world of the living and the rational.
Yeah, you know, and it would actually make it come full circle if we kind of follow that idea of that lie that kind of set off that whole thing, that control knob of CO2. That's what allowed that topic to monopolize, you know, climate change, to monopolize the whole Earth Day movement in general. So, yeah, it brings it back full circle. However, can't wrap up the show yet because there is one more facet. We'll go through this real quick, though. And that's just the idea of, like, success, you know, because public perception, public outreach, those are all secondary to the actual getting results, right? So if nobody cares about climate change, like, at all, and you've got the worst people that are pushing for it, yet politicians are still succeeding in getting their agenda through, then the movement would still be considered largely a success, I would think, right? So obviously, it's easier to get there with your agenda if you have public support, but they're not necessarily joined at the hip. So where are we when it comes to legislative and policy success on the climate change front? On one hand, we saw how the Green New Deal was received. It was a colossal failure, just blew up on the launch pad. We are nowhere close to getting 100% renewable energy by 2030. Linnea mentioned it earlier in a different part of the conversation that these sweeping changes that you know, we've been told since we were kids that are needed to avert disaster haven't happened yet. But on the other hand, you see action seemingly daily by the Biden administration or just those that are in power. Granted, a lot of that has to be kind of misnamed as an inflation reduction bill to actually get through the door or anything like that. But we are seeing pushes and mandates and all of this sort of stuff. And whether or not we complain about it on this podcast and, you know, we try to raise a fervor about it, like, a lot of the stuff still gets through. So, Chris, I'll go to you first on this one. But what are your thoughts on this? Is the actual climate movement a success when it comes to the results that they're able to push through, or is that also still a failure?
I kind of disagree with how you frame this, because I think, yes, the Green New Deal itself failed, but they've just gone to the piecemeal approach, and they are been very successful the past couple of years, getting, you know, incremental laws passed, and especially at the state level. I mean, in Illinois, I can't keep up with how many regulations and bills are proposed trying to, quote unquote, combat climate change. And those, we know that those bills are not really designed to do that. They're designed to do different things. They have different intentions, but they are still, I think, popular because, like we said earlier, too many Americans and too many people around the world still buy the lie that carbon dioxide emissions are going to cause a global catastrophe. So, you know, granted, yes, they're not doing it in like one giant bill like they probably want to, but they're just doing their, you know, here, there, you know, here and there approach. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, Linnea, from just like an energy perspective, I mean, you see these headlines that talk about these big projects and all of this, and we're going to get more renewable energy than ever. But it's like, yeah, but the world is also using more fossil fuels than ever, too. So, you know, maybe the percentages are shifting from 2% to 4% for renewable energy, wind and solar or something like that. But like, that is still an incredibly massive hill to climb in an increasingly short amount of, well, not really, in a short amount of time that they say that we have left to avert disaster. So I don't know. What do you think when it comes to like the success in terms of, you know, the actual like legislation and, you know, stuff that they get through the gate? Is it successful or is it not?
Well, they're certainly successful in putting up a whole bunch of wind and solar panels and selling a whole bunch of those. That's certainly been very successful. You know, we've got Republicans running around talking, bragging about their big infrastructure projects, and their big infrastructure projects are they're putting in wind and solar, or they're putting in a carbon capture or something. And that's the, if you want to see a project that really brings out what the real goals of the green energy people or like the climate change people, what their actual goals are, you look at the way they react to carbon capture and storage or carbon capture and use. They hate it. They don't want you to do that. But what's the difference? If you use fossil fuels, but you pull all of the carbon dioxide that's emitted from using them out of the atmosphere right away, and you stuff it in the ground or you do whatever with it, make, I don't know, pencil lead or something. What's the problem? But they don't want that, because the goal isn't to stop carbon dioxide. It's to stop people from having abundant energy. That's the point. So, but no, it's very disturbing, very, very gross and bothersome to me when you have, you know, this is framed as kind of like a, the crazy green liberals issue. And then you turn around and you look at, people from Florida or from North Dakota that I can think of, Republicans who are in Congress, who are going, trying to get a bill passed that would be the first step towards having carbon taxes in the United States, like carbon border tariffs and stuff. And that's a Republican position, is we'll tax them. we're going to tax them to stick it to China, because China emits so much carbon dioxide. And so what we're going to do is we're going to tax all products coming from them because they're killing the planet. Whatever. So yeah, they're successful on that point. They're successful on getting issues pushed both on the left and on the right. And it's, I don't know. I would say that they are successful in slowly moving their agenda along. You know, you have in Illinois, a bunch of communities were saying, no, we don't want wind turbines. No, we don't want solar panels everywhere. So what does the state government do? They make it so that local communities aren't allowed to say no to these kinds of infrastructure projects anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, it's something that you have to fight tooth and nail every single step of the way. It's the most boring, agonizing stuff, the policy sure. angle, but it is really, really important to fight it.
All right. So we're already 5 minutes long here, 6 minutes long. So I'm going to go around the horn and I'm going to have everyone finish this statement. The state of the climate alarmist agenda is, and then you're going to finish it. So Linnea, I'll start with you since you were just finishing up talking. The state of the climate alarmist agenda is.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what this format would be. I don't know. The state of the climate alarmist agenda is, I'm bad at this. Someone else give me an example first.
All right, I'll go to you last. Chris, just like the, you know, president and State of the Union, yep. He comes out and says, state of the climate alarmist agenda is?
Still a threat.
Okay. All right. Still a threat. Jim Lakely, the state of the climate alarmist agenda in the year 2024 is?
Strong. You know, that's like the cliche word from the State of the Union address, is the State of the Union is strong, and the state of the climate alarmist agenda is strong at the moment. But I think that obviously the policies are poor, and I think their attitudes are depressing. But certainly right now, the state of the climate alarmist agenda is strong.
Yeah, I guess I'll go to you. Let me say my piece, and I'll go to you last, Linnea. But you know, maybe relatively speaking, or not relatively speaking, it's strong, but relatively speaking, in just the face of like the last several years that I've been immersed in the whole climate change, you know, debate and all of that, I feel like in 2024, the state of the climate alarmist agenda is not that great. I feel like it's kind of losing its wheels a little bit, especially, and I've harped on this now like three episodes in a row. But just like the way that it's going to be butting up against like those big tech things that I think Chris was talking about, and the AI and all the algorithms and all this generative AI type of stuff that like needs abundant energy. Where are you going to get that? It's probably not going to be wind and solar. So as of now, I kind of feel like it's not doing great. But Linnea, second try, the state of the climate alarmist agenda is?
Right. Well, following Jim's, it would be stunning and brave in this case. But no, I would say they're under observance right now, or under observation right now. Gotcha. We're gonna keep an eye on them. The connection between the climate alarmist agenda and like the ESG or the WEF stuff is probably going to be their downfall, honestly, because it brings a lot of people from all sorts of angles up against them. So I like that. So we'll keep hitting them on those points.
All right. We'll see how this goes. You know, 365 days later, we'll come back to this and we'll do another. Maybe we'll make a routine out of this. The state of the climate alarmist agenda every Earth Day from here on out. But
just don't spring a pop quiz on Linnea next time she's on, or she might not come back.
Good point. All right. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the In the Tank podcast. Join us every week for a new episode. For those audio only listeners that are catching the show on a Friday or later, leave a review for us on iTunes. That'd be greatly appreciated. Or you could also join us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon, where we are live streaming on Facebook and YouTube and X and usually Rumble. And you can join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comments on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. Also, you can follow us on Twitter or X at In the Tank Pod, or send your comments and suggestions to the show by emailing us at inthetankpodcast@gmail.com. Jim Lakely, where can the fine people find you?
At J Lakely on X, at Heartland Inst on X, and always visit heartland.org.
Fantastic. Chris Talgo, what do you have to pitch today?
Likewise, heartland.org. Awesome content up there. Go to the opinion section. Some really good op-eds have been written in the past couple of weeks, and please go and look at our Socialism Research Center page, because that's the place to be.
Place to be. Also, Linnea Lucan, where can the people go to find your work?
Please go to climaterealism.com. We have a ton of great stuff on there. We also have a live stream every Friday at the same time as this one. So please join us over there, noon central. It's a good time. We have a rowdy audience, so it's good.
Yes, that's the Climate Realism Show, Fridays at noon central time. All right, fantastic. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
He's a lion, dog-faced pony soldier.